Welcome to Investigative Post's Money in Politics. I'm Jeff Kelly, government and politics reporter with Investigative Post. And I'm talking, as always, with Ken Cruley, who researches and produces Money in Politics, a regular feature on our website. For this column, Ken winnows through campaign finance filings to see who bankrolls our elected officials. And then on this podcast, we discuss why. Welcome, Ken.
Thank you, Jeff.
Ken, we're following up on our last column. Your last column was about Congressman Brian Higgins, nine-term congressman, and his financials. We're looking at a newly minted congressman this week, Chris Jacobs, in the 27th.
Jacobs actually raised almost twice as much money as Higgins in the last cycle. But how he raised it and what he spent it on were considerably different than what Higgins did.
Perhaps the reason he raised so much money is because he had a competitive race.
Actually, he had three competitive races. He had a Republican primary that he was running in last June against Beth Perlato and Stefan Mihailu. He also, the same day, had a special election against Nate McMurray to fill out the rest of 2020. And then in November, he ran against McMurray again for the full two-year term. So within a six-month period, he ran three times for Congress.
What a mess 2020 was for everybody.
Yeah.
And an expensive mess for him. So what did you find?
Well, I found that he raised a little under $1.6 million. He also loaned his own funds to the committee and to the tune of $561,000. So almost a quarter of what he spent came from his own pocket as a loan. As of the end of January, his campaign treasury is a little under $63,000, which is about $1,050,000 less than what Brian Higgins has. Of course, personal resources are a little bit different. I found that political action committees, the PACs, contributed a little under $317,000, nowhere near what Higgins raised from PACs. The interesting thing about the PAC contributions is that the largest one was from Majority Committee PAC, which is affiliated with the House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy. McCarthy's PAC gave Jacobs $40,000. The House Republican Whip, Steve Scalise, has a PAC called the Eye of the Tiger, and he donated $10,000. Big money, other than his personal loan, came from almost 1,100 personal individual contributions, which averaged almost $1,200. Of that, those contributions, members of the Jacobs family gave $89,600.
What did expenditures look like? Who did he spend the money on?
Well, he was aggressively spending it on TV, as anybody who's been around Buffalo in the last 6 months would know. He spent $1,058,000 to a Virginia firm called Strategic Media Services, which was for the TV production and placement. He also used another Virginia firm, the Terrence Group, $66,000 for surveys, and then a whole bunch of campaign firms and individual consultants, campaign staff, were paid money. So his campaign, he obviously had very active campaigns last year compared to what Higgins ran. And so his money was going into heavy-duty campaigning, a lot of it the type of stuff that gets you on television.
Right, and established Republican vendors. You know, he brought in a campaign team from out of town. And you know, when you do that, you bring with them the relationships they have with certain vendors, and they
right, and the 15% commissions that they might be taking for their TV ad placements and stuff.
Yes, indeed, good for them. Someone made money in 2020.
The other thing interesting of all the congressional contributions is there are limits that are relatively low compared to what someone might donate in New York State to local campaigns, but because Jacobs was involved in three campaigns in such a short period of time, some individuals were able to give more than the $5,600 that would be the limitation for the cycle. Lawrence Jacobs Jr., physician, gave $11,200. Dwayne Paddock gave $8,400. So there's somewhat larger contributions than would normally be the case in congressional campaigns.
Now, we discussed this when we talked about Brian Higgins, and I think we'll discuss it again, if you will, in the context of Chris Jacobs. Because we have new census numbers coming out, there will be a redistricting, and Western New York is going to lose a congressional seat. What does that bode for Jacobs' political future?
Well, I think he potentially could have a problem. He would have a limit. He was a former state senator, but he was a Republican, and they're in the minority in both houses of the legislature. So he has very little influence on how the lines are going to get drawn. And so he's probably going to have to take what is carved out and see where he might fit. Theoretically, he could run against Brian Higgins. If he was in Higgins' district and chose to run the campaign against him, he might move into an area where Tom Reed is currently the congressman, or maybe where Joe Morrell, who's the congressman from Rochester, will be situated. But we don't really know. There was one suggestion about recreating something similar to what the district Louise Slaughter had, which was called the Earmuff District, because it started in Buffalo, went up through Tonawanda into Niagara County, and then across Lake Ontario and wound up in Rochester. And so that, I suppose, could happen, but that was strongly criticized at the time, so I don't know if they would try that. But this time, unlike 10 years ago, the state legislature is likely to draw these lines. 10 years ago, the Democratic Assembly and the Republican Senate couldn't get together on congressional lines, and it was a long, protracted legal case, which ultimately wound up with a federal magistrate judge in New York City drawing the congressional districts that we've had for the last 10 years. And so we wound up with a Higgins district, extremely Democratic. There have been a number of, there was Chris Lee, and there was Chris Collins, and now Chris Jacobs, occupying a district that's heavily Republican. Jacobs won't have a whole lot of influence on how those lines get drawn.
No, and politically, you know, throughout his political career, Jacobs benefited from a perception that he is kind of non-denominational, that he could had crossover appeal. Democrats would vote for him. But he sort of cast that aside in order to run in the 27th, the heavily red 27th district. He associated himself with the president, got the president's endorsement. He more or less vowed his fealty to the Trump administration in the belief that that would help him win in the 27th. If he were to face Higgins, say, in some district drawn presumably to favor Higgins, that is to say, with a Democratic advantage, that would be a tough history to overcome.
I think it would be. I think Jacobs has crossed the Rubicon going the wrong way, and he's staked out his position, extreme Republican right-wing policies, right up to the point of not supporting the second impeachment of Trump, and also being kind of mealy-mouthed, I think, a lot of people would consider, about the comments after the mob attacked the U.S. Capitol. Those things and probably a number of votes that he's cast that were Trump-like would come back to haunt him if he had to run in a district against Higgins. And so if he's going to run again in 2022, seems to me he's got to gravitate to some other district that is going to be a little more friendly to him.
To wherever the state legislature decides to isolate all the Republicans Rochester and Buffalo. That's Money in Politics for this week. You can follow Ken Cruley's work at politicsandstuff.com. And of course, keep coming back to investigativepost.org for our deep coverage of issues of importance to Western New York.